So have you turned us? You hit play?
We're rolling.
Okay, good. So your wonderful music's playing?
This is your theme song.
Ben's jamming out over there.
If Ben and Jacob had like a Texas Rangers remake in Coleman, this would be the theme song.
Ooh. I would be Walker.
I'm definitely Walker.
You were Trebek.
No way. I'm totally Walker.
There's no possible way. I'm sorry.
I'm Walker.
You don't have the Chuck Norris vibe. I hate it for you.
Totally Walker right here.
Are you feeling it, Ben?
I'm feeling it. I like it. We need a Dodge truck.
You could jam to this, couldn't you?
We do, yeah.
You're a musician.
Oh, I'm a wannabe musician.
By the way, it didn't start out with a Dodge truck. It was a Chevy when they first started the show.
Was it a Chevy?
Yes.
So I don't remember back then. I was out of college by then, Jacob, and I'm sure you were still in high school watching.
I was probably in elementary school. You're so much older than
that
me.
That is true,
but
yeah.
What kind of pistol did he have at first?
I honestly have no idea.
I couldn't tell you what it was. It was a revolver. And then later on, whenever he got the Dodge, he went to a Beretta 92.
That's pretty interesting.
Don't test my Walker Texas Ranger knowledge.
You know a lot about the Texas Ranger.
Oh, no, not the Texas Walker.
Walker Texas Ranger.
Walker Texas Ranger.
I mean, as cool as that is, what about the A-Team? Did you watch the A-Team?
See, I'm not that old.
No, see, you should definitely watch the A-Team.
It can't compare to Walker.
It does compare to Walker. Yeah, there's no question about it.
So I don't even remember their names. You got the Face.
Oh, you have Hannibal, Face, Hannibal, Murdoch, B.A., are you kidding? Murdoch is the crazy pilot from Vietnam who smoked too or inhaled too much Agent Orange, but he can fly anything.
Mm. Did the new movie compare to the show?
I don't think so.
Ooh,
it was cool, but I like the show better than the movie.
So you have watched the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You're not one of those that just never watches movies.
I do watch movies.
Well, at least you've got decent taste if you've seen the A-Team and you did know Walker Texas Ranger. What's the guy's name? All right, we're going back to Walker here.
All right.
Question for both of you. What was the bartender's name?
Oh, the old man?
Yep. Out of the millions of our fans that are watching, they'll know Sam.
I don't know. Was it? No, hang on. He was a former Ranger.
Yep.
I don't know his name.
CD.
CD. Got it.
Gosh.
That was my next guess after Sam.
Yes,
it was
Sam.
Close.
I like that Sam was just
sound. I was just waiting for CD to come out next.
What's Trebek's first name?
Alex.
Not Alex Trebek.
Gosh. I don't know. I never paid that much attention.
James went by Jimmy.
See, here's the way I look at television, all right? Walker, Texas Ranger, A-Team, whatever. I just want to veg out when I watch TV. I don't want to have to think about it. It's just a thought. It's like, okay, you know what the plot's going to be. There's going to be a damsel in distress somewhere. All right. Walker's going to go in and save the day.
With a roundhouse kick.
With a roundhouse kick. 35 roundhouse kicks to the head, by the way. But then you don't have to think about it. You just, okay, you know what's going
to
happen.
But you have to retain something.
But you know the next.
In and out, right?
Till
the next one.
Yeah.
In and out.
See, fellas, y'all don't understand. Right. This is a steel trap that just collects information.
I guess I get it, but I want to veg out.
If they did a remake, who do you think they could do? Could they replace?
Chuck Norris.
Could they? Or he's just coming back?
You can't.
It'd have to be him. There's no way.
They've done a remake.
Have they? I didn't know that.
Failed miserably because it was not Chuck Norris.
I had no idea they did a remake.
Yeah, see? Exactly.
And I think that's where the A-Team was. You know, when you look at the A-Team remake, it was good, but it wasn't the A-Team that we remember from the original A-Team. You know, I mean, and I think maybe if they did a remake every generation, that generation is going to think that their A-Team is going to be the best because they don't know the two or three prior.
Yeah. You think they'll ever do a remake of MASH?
I don't know. That would be a good one to do, though.
Nobody's ever even talked about it.
Yeah. It's a good one.
That's a show I've watched maybe twice.
Really? I think I've watched a ton of... My dad liked MASH, so I would just sit there and we'd watch MASH.
It's a little dark at times.
Yeah.
But MASH is?
Yeah.
I thought MASH was the comedy.
Silly comedy, but there was some undertones there.
Yeah, I think it puts the historical factor of what those people were dealing with in war and combat zones. I mean, you know, and then... You're a surgical hospital, so you're losing people. You're dealing with people that have major trauma. You know, I think there's an undertone with it for sure.
All right, y'all just got way too heavy on the MASH all of a sudden. Move to something light. What about Friends? Were you a Friends guy?
Friends is the best ever.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So I think you're like a Friends in that age bracket. You're either Friends or you're either Seinfeld.
Mm, yeah.
You know, the Friends was just man, I get all of it. It's just funny and it's dumb and you laugh. And Seinfeld, you kind of have to think about some of the jokes with the humor. And I think it's the same way now with like The Office. I think people, like, you either get The Office or you don't. Whereas I think Seinfeld was the same way. Friends, I don't know, I wouldn't consider myself super smart, so it's pretty easy to get friends. You just laugh, you know.
I didn't appreciate Seinfeld until I got older. And now I can sit there and laugh at Seinfeld almost as much as Friends. Now, Friends is still one of my favorites.
I do like Friends. It's amazing to see the kids now, like my kids' age. They don't get the humor in Friends. Or there's a specific reference to a Friends show that they don't understand because they didn't watch it. Like, you know, Joey in the Cabinet. Everyone that ever watched Friends is going to know Joey in the Cabinet.
Yeah.
Or they're going to know something with Ross's character or Rachel's character. And you can reference that like in a small conversation. Right. And the three of us could laugh, but kids that are 10, 15 years behind us, they're not going to understand it. And I think every generation has that. You know, every generation has something that they grew up with that they're going to laugh about that we don't know because we weren't involved in it.
We weren't there, yeah.
But, you know, back when we were growing up, gosh, we sound like three old men sitting here. Back in our day, let me tell you. But what I mean, kids are on YouTube. They're watching podcasts.
Yeah.
They don't have that centralized. I mean, we went home and on, what was it, Thursday nights, the new Friends came out.
Yeah.
So what do they do? I mean, because it's all, I mean, they've got this unlimited information. Is there something singular that draws the focus?
I think they do, though. I think they know the same streamer or whatever. You know, like we know.
Yeah, but think, what's the hot thing today? I could not tell you.
I have no idea.
That's the thing. Yeah, I think you're right about that. It's just all over the place.
But our parents knew about Friends.
Right. What do you think was like peak?
Peak
music.
What?
Peak music?
You know, yeah. Ooh. Like as far as.
Well, I guess it depends on what you grew up with and what you like. You know, yeah. Like I remember growing up with my dad and he's listening to Sam Cooke. And I'm like, this is terrible. You know, but that generation, they liked it. But then, you know, as my dad was transitioning because. So he would have graduated high school in 66, and that's kind of his genre, all right? Well, as I'm coming up and I'm learning music, I'm in the Zeppelins, and I'm in the beginning of the 80s hair bands, and you know, and then you still have the Rolling Stones that are making an impact. You have Aerosmith that's making an impact, late 70s, early 80s, and then like then the grunge comes in, and I didn't go grunge at all. I reverted back.
You were out on grunge.
I was just – it wasn't me at all. I mean, I liked the 80s – rock, not just crazy metal, but rock. AC/DC's and Guns N' Roses and
Aerosmith
Metallica,
is one I'd Aerosmith. Love to see live. Did you ever get to see them?
Absolutely, I got you to did? See them. And I think that's what people don't do right now. They don't go to concerts. You know, when I was growing up, you'd go to concerts all the time, $25. You go, there's unbelievable 20, bands.
Whoa. Let's stop right there. $25.
$25. I'm telling you right
concert.
Now.
There's no.
You but know you what also, it is now?
Oh, there's no telling.
$225, $230.
But you see a
live show.
Yeah.
You're not seeing a concert. That's you're true. Seeing a light show, and you're talking about synth. I mean, that's all you see. It's
that's
all
right.
about how loud we can make the music, and you can barely hear the fact that they really can't sing.
Yeah, you're right. It's,
but, you know,
it's
you're probably not ever going to get to see Aerosmith again. You know, Steven Tyler.
I saw that. Yeah, oh, man.
I mean, you know, and then you have to look at those guys, and it's like, okay, when should we retire? But there's still the nostalgia of seeing them together.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if they still sound the same, let them keep playing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hey, look, I'll tell you right now, one of the best shows we ever went to, Cheryl and I went to a ton of concerts before we got married, and she did as well, so we've tried to do that in our married life, but Guns N' Roses in Nashville was the best show I think we've ever seen, ever.
Wow. What year was that, Ben?
2016.
And it was still good?
It was honestly the best concert that I think we've been ever, and here's why, all right? So I was at the Turf Club in 91 or 92, whatever year that was, that Guns N' Roses was down there and they're playing the Turf Club, and Axl gets a bottle thrown at him and he's mad and he's already drunk and he leaves, concert's over, and, you know, turned into a melee down there. So I felt like all these years, I really need to see Guns N' Roses. And let me back up for a second. I look at Guns N' Roses kind of like I do Led Zeppelin, where they were really instrumental in those 10 to 12 years that they were really hot and the band goes away, but their music kind of lives forever. Same with Led Zeppelin, right? So we go to this Guns N' Roses show, and it's in Titan Stadium. It's 75,000 of our favorite people hanging out around us wanting to hear the same music. And Chris Stapleton opens for Guns N' Roses.
Cool.
I don't know who Chris Stapleton was because I don't listen to country music. I understand country music, but that's not my genre of music. So I don't know who Chris Stapleton is. And he's playing, and he's really good. I'm really impressed with what I'm hearing. And he's playing a couple songs, and he grabs his guitar, and I remember he's over here tuning his guitar. He said, if you would have told a seventh grade Chris Stapleton that he's going to be opening for Guns N' Roses, he said that would have been the highlight of my life at that point, right? So he said, if it's okay with you guys, I'm going to play a few more songs and I want to see the next show. So now he's winning fans my age and mm-hmm. people 10 years above me and 10 years below me because he wants to see this show. And they come out from the beginning, hammered down, very first song off Appetite for Destruction. It's So Easy. The first single they released in 87. They look like they did in 87. They're wearing the same type jeans. Axl's got a plaid shirt tied around his waist, just like, yeah. you know. And so whoever marketed that, whoever put that together and put that stage presence together, marketed that toward what the memory was of Guns N' Roses and where you were in life when you became a fan of Guns N' Roses. And it spoke. I mean, those guys played for 3 hours. Look, they played a solid hour before they did band introductions. They just came in and they played the music. It was interesting. Cheryl and I were talking, and I'm like, if I didn't know better, I'd say they're lip-syncing because the music sounded so good, but I didn't care if they're lip-syncing because it's exactly what you wanted to hear. Right. They didn't go off into this crazy jam. They just played the songs that were on the album.
And that's that band, I mean, when's their heyday? Early 80s? Mid-80s?
I'd say 87 to 92.
And they're in Titan Stadium selling out that big, huge arena, yeah. 75,000 fans, yeah. that long after.
And they played... They played the albums of Guns N' Roses, all right? They played what you knew from, say, 87 to 92, the Appetite for Destruction through Use Your Illusion 1 and 2. And they didn't go off on the crazy tangents when Guns N' Roses broke up and Axl was doing his thing and Duff was doing his thing and Slash was doing his thing. No, they just played Guns N' Roses.
They were playing for the fans.
That's right. Whoever put that together, whoever scripted That's that. Cool. And so when Axl came out for Paradise City, and at this point in time, it's a madhouse, all right? Because they've been playing for so long. But what was interesting about that, Steven Adler, who's the original drummer, all right, Steven Adler was there, but he's had a stroke, so he can't play all of the songs. But he could play two or three songs, so they bring Steven Adler out. So now you have the nostalgia of the original band. Now, the only one that's there is not Izzy because he said he can't do another tour because he's not going back to rehab. Okay, I get it because I don't know what those guys went through, but you can, you know.
You can only imagine.
But it just takes you back 30 years. You're like, this is the coolest night of my life because, number one, I'm sharing it with someone who lived it as well. You know, she liked that type of music as well. It's not her favorite, but she's more of a Dave Matthews type person. But she understood, and so did all those people that were around us. That was a part of us. And so all those 75,000 people who were in that stadium, they all came from different places in the South, different walks of life, whatever. But they all came together to watch that band play that music. And they knew every single word. I just think that's the cool part of it.
So that's your jam, just during that time, those bands, that's where you can go, and that's your...
Yeah, really, it's hard to get... So I know this may sound kind of weird. You guys may understand it, you may not, but my phone rings so much, and I have to talk to so many people throughout the week that when I'm in the truck, I don't listen to anything. I don't talk. I just... It's some quiet time. You know, because then you have to go from work to the house or to your kids' sports or whatever they're doing. And you guys understand it because you have kids. You're always on. All right. You're on when you get up in the morning to get your kids ready. You're on at work. You have a little bit of quiet time in the truck. Then you're on again if you're helping out with their sports or doing whatever. And then you're on because you have to be a father. Then you have to be a husband. And then you go to sleep, and the next morning you're on again. So when you get a little bit of quiet time, and maybe that's my problem with this new music, I don't listen to it. Mm. You know, when I do listen to music, I'm like, I'm just going to go back to a playlist from the 80s, and I'm happy because I know the words. Not that there's not some good music here and there that I've learned, but...
You know what you like.
And I'm glad you said that, though, about the quiet time in the car. There'll be plenty of times that I'll leave the bank, be driving home, and get almost where I'm pulling in the driveway and realize... You haven't listened to a thing.
Yeah.
And it's just been so pleasant.
Peaceful.
So pleasant.
Yeah, it's peaceful. So I have a question. I got a funny question.
Right. Oh, goodness. All right, here we go.
You guys are both married, right? All right. So have you ever just been sitting there watching television, literally just vegging out and watching television and just watching one scene to the next, and you're laughing, you know, it's a comedy, okay, right?
Yeah.
And then Cheryl, and I love her to death. She doesn't do it anymore because she understands it now. But we're just watching TV, relaxed, kids are asleep, you know. there'd be a commercial. She's like, "What are you thinking?" I'm like, "Well, I gotta be honest with you. 3 seconds ago, I wasn't thinking about anything, but now I'm like, man, did I finish everything at work that day? Was it because you know?" And in the early part of our relationship, when I got quiet, she took that as something was wrong because I'm kind of wide open all the time. So in the few minutes that I would get quiet, it's like,
"What are you thinking?
Is he mad about something?" Yeah. Like, no, I'm literally watching Friends. You know?
That's sort of a relaxation kryptonite, right?
Is. Yeah. But then I'd be like, well, now I'm thinking about everything, okay? Did I get that bill paid? Do we have enough stuff for tomorrow? Do the kids have lunch? You know, whatever. You know, have I done everything I need to do for the rest of the week? And so I told her, so let's make a deal. Never again. What are we thinking?
That's such an open-ended question because at that point you're not, and then you go, well, what should I be thinking about? And then the floodgates open.
Yeah. And so she had to learn with me, and I had to learn with her. When she's quiet, that's how she recharges her batteries. When I'm quiet, I'm either watching TV, I'm asleep, or I'm mad. So I'm not thinking anything. But.
See, I'm the exact – I go home, and I'm just quiet. I don't talk, and – Holly's like you. She can talk.
Yeah.
And she'll sit there and I'll be watching TV and she'll be talking to me and it's one of those I have to go, huh? And whew, that's not a fun conversation either.
No, I can imagine. You know, if I didn't talk, I have so many words I have to get out each day. If not, I would just implode. You know, you guys would be talking about me in the past tense. You know.
I've never thought about you as being a quiet person ever.
I can see that.
I'd be like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah. I'm just glad we have trees that can absorb the carbon dioxide that I expel every day.
You know? I'm glad you said that, though. Now every time I see him, so what are you thinking about?
Sometimes you might not get the answer you want.
That's the fun. It's always just a crapshoot to see what you're going to get. All right, what's going on at the airport?
How about that for an open-ended? Yeah, I mean, a lot of good things going on up there. So last Thursday, we had a groundbreaking for a new hangar that we'll be building. Probably start that in the spring. So that will bring in turbine maintenance. So turbine is a jet aircraft, anything that flies, could be a turboprop, anything that takes jet fuel will be turbine maintenance. So they're going to focus on turbine. We do have a company up there now that is doing piston maintenance. So piston, everything that flies off avgas. So the good thing for us is we're going to be able to service jet fuel aircraft and avgas aircraft, so jets and pistons, which
is
great.
Wait a minute. I thought everything took jet fuel. No. So there's different.
There's difference.
What is avgas? Okay.
All right. That's aviation fuel.
It's
aviation gasoline.
See, I knew that. Hey. I knew what he meant, aviation but I gasoline. Thought it was all jet fuel.
Aviation.
Jet fuel
gasoline.
Is kerosene.
What?
Yeah, jet fuel is kerosene.
Just kerosene.
Basically kerosene, yeah.
Huh.
I mean, if you smell it, it smells just like kerosene. So
does it burn at a higher rate? Is it higher octane? What's the.
Well,
on,
it's
the
more. So
here.
A jet is more like a diesel. And a piston is just going to be like the piston in your car. It's just going to be a different. It's a leaded gasoline in the avgas because it has to keep the cylinders lubricated, so the lead helps do that. The jet is a turbine, so the jet pulls air in, compresses the air, ignites the air, and presents thrust going out the back of the aircraft.
Wow, I'm impressed. You actually knew the answer to that. I thought that you would stumble a little bit. Now, it might be wrong because I can't fact check you. I'm not,
I wouldn't know.
That's what he's doing on the computer as he's over there just
right
looking.
Ahead, yeah. Yeah, so they're called compressor sections and hot sections. So all those fans in the jet, there are multiple stages of fans in the engine, and they're bringing the air in, and it's compressing the air. It introduces the fuel, makes the combustion. Not really combustion, I guess it makes the thrust, and thrust rolls out the back of the aircraft to give it you propulsion.
This is a real elementary question. Is the runway long enough to support just about any jet that wants to come through? I'm not talking about a 747, but just any private jet.
Well, so right now, yes, we do. The short answer to that is yes. We have room to take the aircraft that are coming to see us now. Now, the long answer to that is we need an extension because we need to get over 6,000 feet because once you get over 6,000 feet, you can put more fuel on the aircraft. So everything on the performance data of an aircraft is based on weight. What's the maximum takeoff weight of that aircraft and the maximum takeoff roll? So as we talk about things, it's max takeoff roll as opposed to max takeoff weight. And you need to know that parameter of the aircraft. You need to be prepared for that. So if there's an abort of the takeoff, they have enough room to stop the aircraft before it becomes an issue.
Okay.
So as we go further, you know, I would hope in the next 10 years or less, we get over the 6,000 foot threshold. And in the next 20 years, I would hope we get over the 7,000 foot threshold. So the 7,000 foot threshold is going to give us more opportunity for any type military aircraft. So, you know, C-130s, stuff like that, they can come in now, but any type military.
They can come in now?
Yeah, we could get a C-130 on the ground. Now, we couldn't get one every day because the rating of the runway is not built for the rating of the C-130. And I don't know the exact calculation, but when you look at your runway data, it would take a group of aircraft and it would say how many times if that aircraft was landing every day. So they would figure out how many times it lands per day. And that's how they get the classification to do the buildup of your runway. So now, if I needed to land a C-130, yeah, we could land a C-130. I couldn't land 30 a day, but I could land a C-130. You know, if we need to land a 737 lengthwise, if it was an emergency, it would land no problem. You know, thrust reversers would be pretty hard once it hit the ground, but you could move that aircraft. But our goal, and it will take years, is to change our classification from a B to a C. Now, by doing that, it's going to give us more opportunities to bring in larger jets. We have three projects going on. I'm going to take them one by one. The new hangar, we just went through that. That's for the jet. All right, the turbine mechanic. The next one will be a new taxi lane, and that taxi lane will come off of our existing taxi lane, Bravo, and it will head east and west instead of north and south because our current taxiways are parallel to the runway. All right, this one will go east and west now and open up a 19-acre parcel for development. So I imagine it's going to take us 15, 16, maybe 20 years to complete that development. But without this taxi lane, we have no way to develop that land. So once it's in place, we'll take this grant money. We'll go as far as we can with getting the taxi lane built. And then as far as we can on the north and south side of that taxi lane to get the sites ready. So we have multiple different sites. We could do another T-hanger. And a T-hanger means that's a long building. And we could put between 8 and 16 aircraft in it. Individual stalls, if you would. Where one would be on one side, they kind of back in. That would be for an individual aircraft. You know, if the three of us had an aircraft, it was all small pistons, say a Cessna 172, we would be in a T-hanger. All right. Right behind the T-hangers, we would have a group of 100 by 100 hangers. Behind those, we'd have a group of 80 by 80s, and then we'd have a group of 60 by 60s. So the 100 by 100 is going to be a mid-cabin jet. 80 by 80 is going to be a mid to small cabin jet, and then the 60 by 60 would fit a light jet. So as we're moving into that realm, the jet traffic and the corporate traffic is what will pay the bills for us. So the pistons are great. We love the pistons, but they don't take the quantity of fuel that the larger jets would take.
And that, I mean, I guess you make money off your stall rentals and everything else, but I guess the fuel is where you really...
It is, and so fuel flow is what you're looking for, is how much fuel you're flowing through the airport. So the more fuel you're flowing, the more traffic you have. The more traffic you have, the bigger the airport. The bigger the airport, the different steps of grants that you're able to get from the FAA. You know, at some point in time, currently we're 87-based aircraft. The goal would be to get us over 100. 100 is kind of a benchmark of based aircraft at your facility, because now you're not a grass strip, or you're not an airport that has, you know, 10 or 15 aircraft. You're becoming a more viable, vibrant aircraft that supports the community. And that's what that airport does. It's not a playground. Now, there are some people that love to play. They have aircraft. That's their hobby. We love those guys up there, okay? That's great. But we also have to be a vibrant, very well-structured aircraft to support the business community. Because most all industries will be located within 15 miles of an airport.
What about the jet rental places for people
like,
that are
like
just
a quarter share?
I don't know.
So are you talking about like something where you could just buy time on the aircraft?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can that will they use our airport
every
to come
day.
Get you? Okay.
Every single day.
Is that what's the bread and butter, Ben? Is that like who uses the airport?
Every industry in this community uses the airport at some point in time throughout the year.
So it's really industry driven.
Mm-hmm.
Is that
industry
sort
driven?
Of the,
yeah.
Okay.
There'll be times we're moving, you know, we'll bring their executives in if they're going to do an expansion. If they have an issue with parts, there's a quality issue maybe at another supplier that's supplying them the parts. They're going to be flying the cargo into us for however many weeks. You have people that have to get back and forth quickly. I mean, it's so. The charter jets are called 135 operations. We see 135 operations all the time. I mean, I think we're probably averaging at this point. I could run the numbers for you. We're averaging 50 to 70 jets a month, depending on okay, where.
So
it
they're
is.
Coming in frequently.
Yeah, we're having jets all quite a bit. So to the point of that takes me to the third phase of our construction. That will be the apron. So our north apron is in shambles. It's terrible. It's the oldest pavement we have up there now that hasn't been replaced. It doesn't score well. So by scoring, I mean when you look at the FAA, they're always looking at safety and security of flight operations. So runways are always first, taxiways will always be second, aprons are always third. Well, with the amount of runways that we have in the nation, runways are always first. All right, taxiways will be second, aprons are always third, but they don't score. So we were fortunate. We started working on that apron project in 2017 under Senator Shelby. And now Senator Britt was chief of staff at that point in time. So she was helping us tremendously. And then she took up the fight with us of trying to get money for that apron so we can do it in one major project. So that will start in spring of 25 as well. We're currently in the design on that apron, and we're looking at how we start parking different groups of aircraft now. And by groups, it would be size and weight. So size is going to be wingspan, weight of what it sits when it sits on the ground. So you have to take the maximum weight that airplane could be when we fill it with fuel, et cetera. So how do we maneuver that through the apron becomes the question. So you think about things, we're building a parking lot basically, all right? But parking lots out here, wherever in town, I don't know, are they 10 feet? I think it's 10 feet, 11 feet on a parking space. Whatever the number is.
Some feel about like they're six.
So. Yeah, especially if you drive a truck. But anyway, so imagine that with a group of aircraft that have a maximum of 36-foot wing, and then a group of aircraft that have a maximum of 75-foot wing, and then a maximum of 115-foot wing. So we're trying to figure out how we maneuver all these different groups and still park them safely on our ramp. Our goal as the airport, and as your airport, because we're the airport for you all and every person that's on this watching the show today, all right, how do we allow those aircraft to move on that parking area under their own power? We want to not touch them as far as tow or tug them as much as possible, because when you hook to that aircraft to tow or tug it, you're 100% responsible for that aircraft. Mm-hmm. So if you've got someone and we made an error, or we damaged a wing, or we damaged a winglet, or we bumped the other aircraft, now that aircraft's out of service. All right, if it's a charter operation, that means it's not making any money.
Ooh.
It's not making any money for the charter company. Not to mention how much it's going to cost to fix it. Not to mention what it's going to cost just to get people here to assess it before they can figure out what it's going to cost to fix it. And if you've damaged another airplane, you know, and I'm going to be honest with you guys, we have jets that are landing up there that are $60 to $70 million. So the more that we can eliminate us having to touch that, the better off we are for our community. But, you know, you see, it's nothing to see between $10 and $12 million sitting on the ramp in one aircraft every day.
What's it like inside one of those? Take the 10 to 12. Is it spacious?
Well, so you have light jets, which are not spacious, all right? You have small cabins, which are a little more spacious, and you have medium cabins, then large cabins. So large cabins, the three of us can stand up in it, no problem. Probably two seats on one side, one on the other configuration. They're going to be captain's chairs. You know, they're going to be club seating, so you're going to have four facing each other. That's going to be a jet that would hold 20 to 50 people. Medium cabin, you're going to duck your head a little bit walking in, but you're still going to be able to stand up. Light jets, small cabins, you kind of walk into them, bend over, grab your seat, kind of plop down, and that's where you are for the jet ride. Now, the majority of those jets, though, the reason they're called light jets, their range, their optimum range is going to be 2.5 hours. So it's not like you have to jump up quite a bit.
Which
you
is know. How far over land?
Depending on the engines, you know, 1,000 to 1,200 miles.
Okay. So, I mean, it's one of those you can jump in, go to the beach, and you're fine.
Oh, easy. Yeah, I mean, listen, I'll give you an example. If a Citation leaves Coleman Regional Airport heading to the beach, all right, they're rolling out, get their ground roll, you know, go through V1, which means they're accelerating. They're over Birmingham 7 minutes.
What?
Yeah. 7 minutes.
7 minutes.
7 minutes.
7 minutes over Birmingham.
Wow.
What altitude do they fly at?
Ceiling's probably 43,000 feet, 45,000 feet, depending on.
So they're basically like an airliner.
They're higher than the airliners usually. A lot of the corporate jets will go higher than the airliners.
You know, I'm pretty good at that. I've done it on the flight sim.
Are you?
I was about to say, that wouldn't get in an airplane with you.
Hey, did you see the guy on the flight sim that did that?
No.
I don't know. I guess there's some game and like you fly
all
these
Microsoft
different things.
Flight Simulator is good.
So does it have something where you like fly courses or whatever?
Yeah. Okay. It's got all of it.
All right.
Yeah.
So there's some way to score.
I guess so.
All right. Anyway, so this guy, whoever this guy is, he has scored high in that game. So they did a deal with him where he had never flown an aircraft before.
A real deal.
Yeah. So the instructor says, okay, they're going through the debrief, and the instructor said, we're going to fly. You're going to fly it. Wow. He said, but the key words that every flight instructor is going to say is, my aircraft. All right, which means you're doing something that's about to kill us. So if I tell you my aircraft, if Jacob and I are in an aircraft together, I'm the instructor, he's the student, and I say my aircraft, that means you release control because I now have control.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
So the instructor's going through this with the guy, and the guy was very professional. I'll give him credit. And the instructor was shocked at how well he flew the plane.
Really?
Yes.
He was capable.
Well, he was capable until they put him in the wind.
All
right? So when he had some crosswinds to deal with, and it's all because you can't feel the crosswind on the simulator.
Right.
You know, you can see it, you can visualize it, and you can even, they call it crabbing, where you kind of have to dive into the wind, you know? But you can't feel the gusts, and you can't feel the movement.
Huh.
Could he not do it by strictly the instrumentation? Because that's what you're doing on the flight simulator. Was just the environment throwing him off that bad?
It's still the feel.
Wow.
So you guys have all flown on an airliner before, okay? You understand the flight, but when you're controlling the flight, it's much different when the wheels break ground because everything starts to move. You're still kind of floating in there with the wind. So, you know, if we're taking off on runway 2 and we've got winds that are kind of quartering coming out of the northwest, so you lift off, airplane's flying, your goal is to fly a runway heading for X amount of time before you make any maneuvers, right? But if you're not paying attention, you have the winds that are coming at the northwest. Yeah, you're still flying that heading, but you're also drifting to the east because the winds are continuing to push you.
Which I'm assuming can take you a long way off course.
Yeah, if you're not paying attention. But there's a big difference between flying the game and flying the plane.
Right. It's got to be.
I mean, because the plane, everything is moving. The wings are rocking a little bit. There's some yaw. You know, you're climbing, you're descending, you're getting... It was a convective activity from the earth. You know, like a day like today, when it really starts to heat up, man, below 3,000 feet, you're going to feel that airplane. You're going to feel the heat waves rising.
Will you really feel it pushing up on the aircraft?
Oh, yeah, you'll feel it, and it'll just be bumpy. It'll just be turbulence under there, you know?
See, I don't like that. I never liked the turbulence.
It's waves on the water.
Don't give me that.
I'm seriously, it's waves on the water.
I can swim. I can't fly.
Yeah, but you can't see the waves. I mean, that's the problem. Is the turbulence just waves on water?
Waves on the water.
Yeah.
Yes. Jacob, would you want to fly? Is that something you've ever wanted to do?
I'd love to know how.
Right.
And I think I'd be pretty good at it, except for taking off and landing. put me up there about 3,000 feet and just let me take the stick for a little bit.
Yeah.
But other than that, no.
It's funny you said that, Jacob, because most everybody can fly an aircraft.
Yeah,
the,
I know.
The landing is the key.
That's the key.
That's the key.
It's taking off hard. Where,
depends on what the crosswinds are doing.
I want to
calm
down.
So it can
day.
Be.
No, taking off is pretty simple. You know, you're just put the power to it, keep it on the center, watching your airspeed, make sure everything's coming alive on the airspeed. You already pre-know. Have predetermined what the airspeed, what the liftoff will be for that aircraft. So once it goes through, the aircraft trying to fly anyway, and just ease back on the yoke and it'll fly.
You know what scares me the most about it is being up there and having to talk on the radio because I can't understand anything.
Well, you can always say, you can always ask them to repeat.
It doesn't matter if you don't know what they're saying to begin with. What? Papa Sierra Alpha Tango Charlie.
Yeah, yeah. That's
4-9er coming in on heading 265, looking for runway 4. I don't. Okay.
All right. So, what you just said right there, Papa, Tango, Charlie. All right, we could take two of those out because it's going to be very difficult to have three letters. So you would, let's just call it Tango Charlie.
All right, cool.
So you would say Tango Charlie. And runway 6-5, that's actually going to be runway 6. So they're going to put you on runway 6. All right. So you would be, if you're flying to runway 6, they would be vectoring you around. You'd be lining up for your approach.
Okay.
And so repeat what you just said.
You
said Papa Tango Charlie.
Papa Tango Charlie Alpha Nuevo coming in, heading 265, looking for runway 4.
All right, let's try this.
10-4, Roger Wilco.
All right, so let's try this a little bit different. Let's say I'm the tower, okay?
All right.
And you're
Ben, do you do this?
Do I do what?
Do you get on the mic and ever say any of that? Like, do you?
Well, when regularly? I fly, you know, on the rare occasions that I get to fly anymore, I mean, I do like to fly, just I don't have time to do it.
Yeah.
But no, Huntsville controls our traffic.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Huntsville Tower controls our traffic.
Sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
So let's say that he has made initial contact with Huntsville Tower. You're 50 miles out.
Okay.
Okay. So we know that we're going to see you in, so you're 50 miles out. We're going to see you in 8 minutes. All right. You're going to join the approach in probably 4 minutes. And we're in a jet. Okay.
Okay.
You're going to join the approach in 4 minutes, and you're going to be on the ground when you join the approach in 3 minutes. Approach is 15 miles out. Okay? So we've already contacted you. We know where you are. Now, we're going to say Tango Charlie because that's who you are today. Okay?
Gotcha.
So we're going to say Tango Charlie, Huntsville Tower. We have you on radar. We have you flight level 5,500 feet inbound.
Okay.
I'm
with you.
You would say Tango Charlie. I confirm. Okay? All right? So they would say maintain current heading and altitude, and you would say maintain current heading and altitude, Tango Charlie. Okay. They would come back a few minutes later. Tango Charlie, descend to 350. Okay. Or
350?
I'm sorry. No, it'd be 035. I'm sorry. 035. Descend from 5,500 to 3,500. Okay. So they put you down from 5,500 to 3,500. All right. Now you're coming in from the west, so you've got to join, right? All right. So you would go ahead, you'd start your descent because you're descending through. They've got to go work a couple other traffic. They're going to come back. Tango Charlie, go ahead and make a left-hand turn. Look for joining the approach at the Melyi intercept. Cross Melyi at 2,500. Go ahead, continue descent rate.
What's Melyi?
Melyi is a intersection point on an approach. Okay, so all of these places out in space have a lat long and an intercept point to grab that approach. So your flight management system, your FMS, is already predetermined that you're going to join that approach there, and then that approach will take you straight down the runway center line for 15 miles out.
What if you failed and you're just operating off visual?
Well, if you're off visual, you're going to be much closer to the airport, and you're going to already have told Huntsville that you're on a base or a final leg, and you have visual to the airport at that point.
And then it's up to you. Mm-hmm. Then you bring the plane in how you want. Okay. Yep. All right. That makes sense.
Yeah. All right. So we're still in IFR conditions. Okay.
I'm with you.
Now, you haven't busted out of the clouds yet, but you have now joined the approach. All right, so you're within 3 to 4 minutes max of landing, all right? Now what you're doing is you're talking to the tower, and you tell tower you've joined the approach, and they will tell you continue descent rate, all right? And you will know what those projected points are, and you can expect to have a visual at X position or at X altitude, meaning you're going to drop out of the clouds.
Okay.
And then from there, you have visual in.
So they have nothing to do with you after that?
Well, once you say I have visual or I have runway in sight, you can say go ahead and cancel flight following. And as soon as you say cancel, you're off their radar. They're not looking at you anymore. Okay.
Okay.
So all airports, you're going to drop under the clouds. You're going to have a certain position where either you see the runway or you don't. If you don't see the runway, that means minimums are too low. You go back up, you join the approach again, you try it, or you divert to a different airport.
So that would be what the minimum altitude for safety?
That's right. Yeah, minimum altitude for safety. That means you clear all obstacles in that area.
If it's foggy, anything else, then you could be diverted to another airport. Mm-hmm.
This is stressing me out just talking about it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, I couldn't imagine. Over here.
Just being in the clouds and all of a sudden it's just boom, there it is.
Well, I mean, and think about it, too. You're doing 200 miles an hour.
Oh.
Now, is it... like at Coleman, what's the minimum altitude that you can approach?
So 450 on the south side. 287 on the north side.
So, I mean, you can get low on the north side.
Yeah, you can get low on the north side. We have better topography on the north end than we do on the south.
I know that from the game. You ought to try it sometime, Ben.
The game?
Yeah.
You've landed at Colby?
Yeah, tried to. I wrecked every time.
Yeah.
Because of what you're talking about.
All right, last question about that.
Sure.
I'm taking off.
All right.
I'm on my ascent.
Okay.
5 seconds after I wheels off the ground, I mean, I'm climbing as hard as she can climb, you lose power. Is there anything that you can do at that point?
Push nose forward, and hopefully you have decent terrain out in front of you.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll tell you this. You can't – your instinct is to turn back. You cannot turn back.
Just you don't have enough room.
You don't have enough altitude to turn back. The aircraft will lose too much altitude in that turn back.
How much altitude would you have to be able to make that turn?
It depends on the characteristics of the aircraft. You know, weight, the type of lift that aircraft has, the size of the wing, et cetera. But the problem is, it's not that turn. It's that 180 turn.
So it's going to take you straight down
instead
of around. Yeah, I mean,
you're taking off, and now you're like, holy cow, the assessment is I've just lost all power. When you start making that 180 turn, you're having to make a very critical 180 turn, and you're really banking hard because that big right wide runway you just took off from looks like a pencil now that you're 500 feet above it. You're just like, that's my only spot. So your safest bet, depending on where you are, is push the nose over and whatever's out in front of you. Ooh. You know, so if I'm out in front of me at 12 o'clock, you're hoping that if 12 o'clock is no good, you've got something at 11 to 1.
But that's as far as you want to turn.
I mean, depends on your altitude. If you're 500 feet or less, 11 to 1. I mean, the further you get back, say like the 9 to 3, it's critical because you're banking so hard and the aircraft is diving, so you're losing that critical altitude. It's decision-making altitude that you have, you know, because these things are happening quick. So if an aircraft is at 500 feet and it's in a spin, you have to do spin training?
No.
Spin training is not fun. But I mean, and I don't mean to make it morbid, but if the aircraft is in a spin from 500 feet, you probably have two spins in probably 3 to 4 seconds.
Oh, it's that quick? It drops that quick out of there? And the reason I bring up all this is just anytime I get on a commercial airliner taking off just scares me to death, because if it's – you look down, you think – you know, you're going to cruise at, what, 35,000 feet, which is just so far up there, it's mind-boggling. But within, what, 3 seconds, you're 1,000 feet off the air or off the ground?
Well, a commercial airliner has enough thrust where if they lose an engine, the second engine will take them back around.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most of those commercial engines are going to have enough power that the second engine is going to get you back to – now, you're not going to climb forever, you know, but they're going to have to start lowering the nose and working their emergency system, but they're not just going to pile it right back into the ground. Okay. You've got enough thrust on that other engine that they're going to work on bringing you around. There's a lot. Shouldn't say there's a lot. I don't want to scare people, but
maybe the less I know, the better.
It's not, you know, if you told me that, hey, there was an aircraft that took off from any airport in America and it lost an engine and had to declare an emergency to come back, it wouldn't be like, holy cow, I'm never riding on one of those again. You know,
And I guess that's why they have redundancy for that reason.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you have the two engines are.
You know, I thought I wanted to fly. I don't know.
Listen, flying's great. It's a great thing, but it's not to be taken lightly.
No.
You know, it is a lot of fun. Man, there are days you just get up there and you fly around and the earth is so neat looking from that altitude. And a lot of people say, well, I'm afraid of heights. Well, actually, you're not. Above 5,000 feet, you can't be afraid of heights because you don't have a reference to the ground. Hmm. You can't say, well, that tree's 100 feet. I don't want to fall out of it. It's just, it changes everything. But it's not something to wake up and say, I'm just going to go fly today. Hmm. You know, I ask myself each time, and again, I haven't flown in a little while by myself, but am I ready for this flight mentally? Did I check the airplane physically? Did I do what the airplane requires me to do to pre-flight to make sure that it is ready to go as well? I'm not saying things can't happen. You know, car accidents happen every day, but if you follow the steps, it's pretty safe. You know, it's a safe mode of transportation. So I want you guys to think about something right now. All right, we were in Vietnam from the better part of 64 through nearly 74. All right. We lost 58,000 guys in Vietnam the entire time we were over there. We lose about 50,000 annually in the United States alone in car accidents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that doesn't keep you guys from driving your car every day, right?
Well, I wish I didn't have to a lot.
But I mean, think about it. How many cars did we see that have passed us? So, you know?
Sure.
But the point is, every hour of every day somewhere in the world, there are a million people in the air.
Yeah.
Every hour of every day.
A million.
A million.
Wow.
That's why just the sheer expertise that those pilots have to have just to get them to and from wherever they're going is just baffling to me.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Has the tech helped, Ben? Is the technology now? I mean, is it better and helpful?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the technology just with GPS is unbelievable. I mean, you will see that continue to get better. It will change approaches. I mean, you will. So the flight management system in the commercial airliners, they have built the entire flight plan in that flight management system. That's what the pilots are doing. As you're loading, they're building the flight plan, okay? And they're all putting it in the computer. Airplane's flying itself. There's no doubt about it. The pilots are monitoring the systems.
But they still have to take off and land.
Yeah, they still have to take off and land. But, you know, worst case scenario, that aircraft's gonna pretty much hit that approach on its own. You know, but now with us in our 40s, are we ever going to get on an airliner that does not have a pilot? The answer is no. All right. With us in our 40s and how we've grown up, we're probably not going to get in a car that doesn't have a driver.
By the way, 39, not 40s.
People that are almost 40. But you think about this now. Let's not think about life as we know it right now. Let's think about life 100 years from now.
Okay. 100 years from now.
100 years from now. When a generation of kids grows up with automation with everything, they're going to be more than likely to get on an airliner or a bus or a train or whatever that doesn't have someone physically doing a task to get them to the next spot.
They're also going to be walking around in little bubbles, not talking to each other.
I mean, they could be doing that too. And you know, it's something. Do we have time?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's something you brought up too. When we were talking about where we were in school and listening to bands and all that stuff. So we've really kind of come full circle on this, right? But I want you guys to think about something. Think about when you
wish we could get him to talk, by the way.
Me?
No, please keep going.
Oh, I like to talk. I can talk all day. But so think about when you graduated from high school. All right. Okay. No, I don't want to know what years it was, but just think about from when you were in ninth grade until you were a senior.
Okay.
All right. So you're a ninth grader. You know the 10th graders, you know the 11th graders, and you know the seniors. Now, they may not always know you, but you know who those people are.
Yeah.
Okay? Now you're a 10th grader, you're playing ball, you're on different teams, you're in study halls. You're going to know the 9th graders that are coming up. When you're 11th grader, you're going to know the 10th graders now that were 9th graders last year. You may meet some of the 9th graders. And when you're a senior, you're not going to know the whole class, but you're going to know those people. Okay? So there's an 8-year gap in there, really, where your freshman year to the seniors, and your senior year to the freshmen. All right? It is amazing to me if I ask my son, and I ask Sophie, and she graduated in 2020. I'm like, hey, do you know so-and-so? They're in 10th grade.
They don't know.
Yeah, they'd be like, no, I don't know them.
They don't know.
I'm like, how do you not know them? But, you know, it's such a different school where I guess, you know, you're in these pods, and like you're in that pod, and that's what you do, and that's where you are. And I'm like, man, I knew everybody. I'll tell you a quick story. You won't believe this. Right. Okay. I'm telling you right now, you ask Cheryl Harrison if this is true, call her anytime. My 11th grade year, I'm trying to figure out my schedule for 12th grade. All right. And I had 6 period with Coach Heitmiller. That was awesome. You know, that was an A. I loved Coach Heitmiller, great guy. Okay. I actually learned a lot from him. Had athletics for cross country and swim team. All right. So that was done. So what can I do 5th period? I'm like, you know what? I need to be an aide. And I'm like, I need to be an office aide. And I'm thinking, I need to be. So I go to the office, and I don't know if you guys know him, Wes Maddox. And Mr. Maddox, if you're listening, you're still one of my favorites. All right. So I go to Mr. Maddox and I said, hey, man, I need to be an office aide next year, 5th period. He said, you do? And I said, yep. He said, you get the paperwork and I'll sign it. Perfect. So now I'm an office aide, 5th period. All right. And guys, I'm telling you, this is 100% true. We're about 2 weeks into my senior year. I'm in the lunchroom because that's where I hung out. I would go up and down the rows of the cafeteria. I spoke to every single person in school every day.
Get out of town.
I'd go by those tables.
Get out of here.
And even if it's just a, hey, how's it going?
Yeah.
Or I knew someone. Yeah. Or I knew, you know, like it was a younger underclassman. They were in my neighborhood. You know, it's just, it may just be, hey, how you doing? You know, but whatever. I would just make, I'd make the rounds, all right? So that's how I met Cheryl. No kidding. Mr. Maddox comes in. We're about 2 weeks in school year. He grabs him by the neck. He goes, you do understand to be an office aide, you have to come to the office. All right. And listen, I can remember this verbatim. I said, Mr. Maddox, let me explain something to you.
Oh, man.
He said, okay. He said, this should be good. And I said, I am a better ambassador for these underclassmen.
Oh,
I said, Mr. Maddox, they will talk to me and they will tell me issues and they will tell me problems that they have here at the high school, or they won't talk to the administration. I said, they'll let me know and I'll bring you their problems and you solve them. You're the hero. And he looked at me and he said, come by the office one day a week. I said, I'll tell you what, I'll walk by on Mondays. I'm waving. Catch me in the lunchroom.
Oh my gosh.
I spent every single day in the lunchroom. Now, I had my friend group. I would see my friend group, okay? But I would just make the rounds to the tables.
Just think if that's who you had to... Kids were panicked about going to lunch because they were worried about him.
Yeah.
It's like, that guy's going to come by and make me talk to him again.
But my point is, you knew people. You know, you developed relationships as a young person that carry into adulthood. You know, and look, I was a football manager because I wasn't big enough to play football. So in fifth grade, Coach Cook, and he said I could be a football manager. That was in 1985. So knowing the guys that graduated in 1985, knowing the guys from 86 and 87 and 88, you know, guys that are 8 to 9 years older than me because I knew the guys I was in class with, it's amazing how that relationship in adulthood fostered as a young person. Yeah. And I think we're missing that. You know, we're missing it because we're texting and we're this, or we're in our pod, or we're not getting out of the window. I mean, look, there are things that I remember catching Ronnie Mayhair's kick when we beat Russellville, you know, in 87 or 88, whatever year that was, because I was, you know, it's like, holy cow, we beat Russellville on a field goal, you know? And so you're in there and you're with that group and you have something you can talk to that group with. I just think our kids.
You said something that people don't go to concerts anymore. People don't go to sporting events. You don't have those memories because
that's
it's
right.
So easy to, you can sit there, you can watch it on your phone.
That's right.
I mean, that's, and that's great and wonderful. What we're doing here, you couldn't have done this. We could have done this 5 years ago,
right,
as easily as you can now, but you don't get that interaction.
You don't get it. And you, like on the concert thing, man, you miss the next day at school or that next Monday at school, and especially if it's a Thursday night concert, man, you are dragging on Friday morning, but you wore the shirt. You've got a Whitesnake shirt or a Poison shirt.
Yeah. Did you see Whitesnake?
I saw Whitesnake.
Yeah.
You know, I saw Aerosmith. I saw AC/DC, you know.
All right, who's one you haven't seen that you want to? Do you have like a bucket
list?
Led
Zeppelin.
Well, that you could, though. Is there anybody that you could... See,
I could go
that you
see
haven't.
And I just want to?
Yeah, like you want to, you just hadn't been able to for whatever reason.
Probably the Rolling Stones.
The Stones.
Mm-hmm.
They still tour?
Yeah.
They still tour.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, I tried to go see them in 89. It
just didn't
work out. I forget what happened. I'm sure I got in trouble for something. But, you know, I will tell you this, though. In 92, I bought 4 tickets to a concert. My dad's like, whatever, because at that point in time, it was in Birmingham. It was at Legion Field. All right, so I'm in 10th grade, 4 tickets, me and my buddy and our 2 girlfriends, right? And she wasn't able to go because her dad's like, absolutely not. You guys are not going to Birmingham as 16-year-olds and having to take a bus from Five Points because they were busing people over because they couldn't bus enough at Legion Field. So I'm like, I'm devastated. So she tells me like the night of the show, she's like, look, my dad said I can't go. And I'm like, oh. So I sold my tickets and I'm devastated, right? So one of my good buddies, still to this day, we're good buddies. He comes up to me at lunch. He's like, hey, I heard what happened. I'm like, look, I don't want to talk about it. He goes, no, you don't understand. Same thing happened to me. I got an extra ticket. I'm like, we're in. All right. So he and I go down there. We did the thing. We parked in Five Points. We bust over. I had no idea where his tickets were. Mine were in the upper deck. All right. His, there was a catwalk or whatever you call that thing coming off the stage. It comes like 20 rows out.
Right.
All right. We're on the fourth row, seats 3 and 4. So that means there's two people between us in the catwalk, right? And we're high-fiving Bono on that U2 show.
No way.
And look, I mean, I was like...
I'd say it worked out.
Wow. I mean, sometimes you just don't know. Sometimes you don't know. But, you know, it's like just to have that memory in that show. Right. And it's like, that's such... They were a big band then, but they were not a mega band yet.
Right.
You know, and just to see that. And like the Stones, it's iconic. And who would not want to see Led Zeppelin in a Led Zeppelin heyday? And just to... That's why I like going to Black Jacket Symphony. You guys ever been to that?
I haven't. What?
Black Jacket Symphony?
I haven't been.
Okay. Well, I won't do a big shout out for them, but it is musicians from all around. $25 for the ticket, all right? And they pick an album, whatever album they're going to do, and whatever it took to create that album in the studio is what they bring on stage to play that album.
That's cool.
All right. Is and that, then after that
nearby?
Where? So you can go Huntsville, Birmingham.
Okay. But, so they tour around.
Yeah. So, like, for example, so let's go back to Zeppelin for a second. You know, Kashmir, that da-na-na, you know, that beat?
Yeah,
that's done off a cello. So they've got someone sitting on the stage with a cello just because you can't replicate that on a synthesizer or a keyboard. You know, it's got to be that. And that's why I like classical music because, man, it took a lot to make that.
I like some classical music, and I couldn't go to a symphony performance. And
you couldn't?
Not and last very long.
I mean, well, look at all the Disney movies and stuff like that. Stuff from your childhood. It's all classical music.
Soundtracks,
yeah.
Well, I talked about it on the last show, but I just went and watched this is the level of my theater experience, but I just went and watched the new Deadpool movie.
Okay.
And the soundtrack to that is cool because it's got a bunch of the early 2000s. I'm talking 2000, like NSYNC, that kind of stuff. Just brings you back to when you were in high school. But then it's got a bunch of your AC/DC. There was one other one that somebody you talked about, Dan, I can't remember. But it's just cool just to hear. And you get to thinking, somebody had to think about that song for this particular scene, and it just fits. That's Madonna is one of the fight scenes. Why would Madonna be? But it fits just perfectly for that movie.
Well, and they're trying to grab that genre of person to watch that movie. And all the commercials that lead up to that movie, it's got clips of those sound bites. So you're like, hey.
And it gets in your head. And it's just like NSYNC. I almost said it three times. It's NSYNC, Bye Bye Bye, was a huge hit in 2000.
Yeah.
And it's cracked the top 20 just because it was in that movie.
Right.
So it's bringing back that nostalgia. And there's kids who are like, oh, look at this new dance move that we've learned. And it's something that we saw, gosh, sadly, 25 years ago. I know you were an NSYNC guy, so that was...
Oh, yeah. They had some big hits.
What was
that? Is that Justin Timberlake?
Oh, so you don't act like, is that Justin Timberlake? You had his poster back in the day.
I was more Christina Aguilera.
Were you?
Why? Because of her vocal range?
That's right. She's one of the best singers.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
She's a good singer.
She is.
She's a good singer.
Great singer.
Yeah. And look, you know what? Listen, I wasn't really into that genre of music, but I will be the first one to say she's a great singer and she has some range in her vocal cords that she can hit. But it is impressive to me that they can choreograph the dance moves to go with the song and make that happen as they're doing that. We're like, you know, a rock band, man, they're just playing it, you know, which is awesome. But there's one thing to play it. And then even NSYNC, and I'm not really an NSYNC guy, but, you know, they're literally in sync of all their moves and everybody's doing the same thing. And that takes hours and hours in the studio to make that come together. So I respect that. And I said earlier that, you know, all the new music is synthesized. It's probably not, but I don't listen to it. You know, there's still some great musicians and there's musicians born every day, but my heyday is I'm going back to the 80s, late 70s, early 80s, and that's...
Who's the best male vocalist in your mind?
Rock band-wise?
I didn't specify any genre. Who's the best male vocalist?
Wow, man.
That's a tough one.
That is a tough question. That's tough. Because there are so many in so many different genres of music. So from the 70s, late 60s, early 70s, Robert Plant.
I don't know who that is.
Lead singer of Led Zeppelin.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of AC/DC after the Back in Black album with Brian Johnson. I didn't like Bon Scott as well. So AC/DC really took off. Unfortunately, Bon Scott passed away, but they became a different band. I like his voice, and I like how his voice ties into the songs. So that would be in the 80s. In the 90s, I got to be honest, I'm going to go with Stone Temple Pilots.
Scott really? Weiland.
Yeah. Yeah, Scott Weiland.
I agree with
Stone Temple Pilots. They just...
He's good.
Man,
but what about Chris Cornell? He was pretty good too, right? Soundgarden?
Yeah, he was. I didn't listen to them a lot. But yeah, I mean, I would say so. Yeah.
Scott Weiland was a good one though. He, I saw him at Oak Mountain. Did you see it?
Were
you
there for that? Yeah.
I'm sure you were.
But the way his voice played with that, with the band. You know, and so here's the interesting thing about that, Jacob, and that's an interesting point you brought up.
Thank you.
Well, I mean, but think about this. Is it the vocalist or is it the band? And I'll tell you why. Probably 08, 09, Cheryl and I went to see Poison. They were doing a kind of a reunion tour. And they absolutely rocked the house. They brought the house down. It was phenomenal to the point of even they were playing Look What the Cat Dragged In, and CeCe DeVille broke a guitar string. And he's jumping down the neck trying to find the note. But it's, even though it's the same note, it's a little bit different tone, right? So Brett Michaels stops the show. And he's like, wait a minute. He goes, hang on. He said, you guys paid to see this show a certain way and hear that song a certain way. He's like, do a guitar change. We're going to start over. So he won every fan that night, right? But that group of those guys played that show, all right? Now, the next year, we went back because Brett Michaels was on a tour now, and he's got a band that's just backing him, and he's playing some old Poison stuff. And, yeah, he's singing the song, but it wasn't the same. Like, the guitar player didn't play the song like CeCe DeVille, and the drummer didn't drum like the Ricky Rocket. And it just – so there could be some great musicians that fit into a band that are awesome. Like, nobody is going to go see, in my opinion, probably no one's going to go see Steven Tyler as a solo act. But they're going to go see Aerosmith all day long.
Yeah, I mean, I grant you that.
That's just the Ben Harrison way of looking at it.
So that takes away my next question, who's the best female vocalist?
Oh, man. You could go, holy cow. So.
You got one just popped up in your mind?
I don't know. That's tough.
Tina Turner.
There's a lot of good ones.
Whitney Houston. Yeah. Christina Aguilera in the 2000s.
She was...
You know, if you like... Aretha Franklin sang with such soul, and she could reach so many ranges with her voice. You know, I mean, it's... I think it just depends on the genre of music you're looking at.
Yeah. Karen Carpenter. She hit those low notes.
Yeah. Yeah. Janis Joplin even had... I mean, she was... So I look at people that have a distinct voice. Like, as soon as they start singing...
You're looking for tone.
You know exactly who it is.
Who is this?
Yeah. Like, you can't put anyone else... You can't replace Steven Tyler with any other person and make the band.
That's right.
You know, it's like when Steve Perry left Journey.
That
ended Journey because Steve Perry's voice went into Journey.
Hey, did you see that guy, it was on America's Got Talent. The high school janitor.
I saw just the other day. Yeah, he sounded great.
I mean, did you see that?
It was shocking.
Oh, you need to pull that up on America's Got Talent. I can't remember the guy's name. Just a real humble guy, been a janitor forever. He would sing to the kids, and he sings Don't Stop Believing by Journey.
Nailed it.
As soon as he opens his mouth, you're like, whoa.
Yeah, because, there's only a few people in the world that can sing that song and make it work, you know, and hit the vocal ranges for the song to sound like you remember it on the radio or at a concert.
Have you tried?
No. I'm not a singer. I wanted to be a bass player in an 80s hair band. I tried to grow my hair out. Problem is my hair is so fine.
Yeah.
I look like Joe Dirt.
Joe Dirt.
I wish
on the bass actually
out.
Sounds pretty good. I'd see that band.
So imagine, I mean, I've
Joe Dirt
on bass.
I mean, I just remember looking at Gene Simmons and looking at Nikki Sixx and these bass players, and it was like, I mean, I gotta be honest with you, even Paul McCartney, I was a Beatles fan. And what impressed me about Paul McCartney is he's playing bass, same as Sting, and he's lead singing. And that's difficult because I can barely play the bass and try to keep rhythm, and there's no way I could sing.
I can't clap on beat. So, I mean, that's just, I've never, and I love music.
You've got no rhythm?
I mean, I can clap, but it's not gonna be on rhythm. You're gonna be, oh, that guy needs to stop real quick. Holly makes fun of me. I'll try to clap. Song come on. I'll try to clap. She just stop singing, stop everything. Look at me. Say, please stop.
You know, let me
I'm that guy's out there.
I don't know how we got there, but I was going to say. Can you do that again? Did the audience see that?
Oh, I wish we had some music. You can turn on that garbage thing, and I can't hear it anyway.
I got to be honest with you, that looked kind of like a stampede. You asked me that. Hey, great. Listen, honestly, great musicians that I think have carried into multiple different genres of music would have to be the Foo Fighters.
Foo Fighters. Have you seen them?
Yeah. No, I've not seen them. I'd like to.
That's one I hadn't seen either. I'd like to go.
It'd be a good one, you know, coming out of Nirvana and then going from the drums to playing guitar and then lead singer.
I say he can play any instrument you put in front of him.
He's good. They lost their drummer, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
Daggum. Yeah.
Well, we're going to end on that because I'm sure that I just got myself in trouble. So, hey, wonderful. Ben, thank you.
Good time. Enjoyed it.
Ben, good to see you.
Absolutely good to see you guys.
Start your music. Did you already start it?
Oh, it's going.
Are we already done?
This is it.
Oh, we didn't do the radio voices or anything.
Have at it. Now's your chance. Call us out, Ben.
Give us a good...
Call us out.
That's all for off air.
Well, that's all for Mad Mike and Jazzy Jacob here this Friday morning on that nice, good My Coleman TV, which is actually your Coleman TV show. We're out here watching all this traffic on some bright sunny day. Looking forward to the weekend. You guys get some brews, go to the lake, have fun, watch ball. We'll talk to you next week.